Do you have that authority?
Do I
know? No. All right. But after all, for me.
My name is Marvin Goldspear. I'm from Basin, South Dakota. I'm also a tribal representative. About 1970, July, or I think it was July 17th or 18th, a group of about five men came to my residence in Batesland. And they commenced to, there was, first of all, they called me to come outside to fight. And they started breaking the windows, trying to break the door in. And I could hear gunshots outside, you know. And I could hear the bullets or the shotgun pellets striking the walls. And there was the people that was there was my sister, my mother, and my children, two children, and my sister's children, five children, and my wife. And, they asked me, it was there, but all this took place within maybe 2-3 minutes. And finally, you know, I said, hell, I'm going to go out and fight, you know. So I picked up a big, what it was kind of a real wrench, or what you call it, a jack handle. I came out with that and I jumped off the porch. And by that time, one of the individuals there, his name was Toe Richards, he started opening fire on me with a pistol. And he fired 6 rounds, emptied the complete, you know, his pistol on me, but none of it struck me from about 10 feet away from me. He was firing out my head, but he couldn't hit me. But then to my right, within about 15 feet, I heard a big shotgun blast. And it struck on my left side of my body. And it turned me completely around. You know, sort of just, sort of fell down, and I got up, and I didn't have, knowing that I didn't have no weapon in my house, I ran to another neighbor's house, it's just right behind me, to borrow a gun there, but they didn't have no gun, and I looked at my side, and I was bleeding, you know, so one of the neighbor's daughters ran to another neighbor's place where they had a phone, and they called the BIA police officers, and they came within about a half hour. And they took me to Pine Ridge, and the doctor's name, I don't recall his name, but he examined me, and then they said they couldn't take the pellets out because it was so hot that when they went into my body, it was sterilized or whatever. And they would have a hard time getting them out on me anyway. So I asked to sign complaints on the individuals at that time, and they said that this was a federal case, and the United States Attorney was going to handle it. And I knew all these persons that attacked him at that time. And I never was issued a subpoena to appear in court. And the FBI started investigating the shooting, what caused it, and who was the victim and all that. You know, I was the one that was investigated on. They questioned my neighbors. They questioned them, like, what kind of person I was, and if I had a drinking habit, or if I was crazy, or, you know, just way off, I guess. And the persons that that shot me, they got away, you know, scot-free. They've never been charged, I think. You know, I think one guy was charged, but I never appeared in court because I was never subpoenaed or anything. That was 1970. To this day, they still threaten me, too, you know. I think he was a police officer at that time. BIA police officer. Tote Richards. He's a police officer now, but he's in Phoenix, Arizona. Police officer down there, I guess. They all got prison records now. I mean, they all been in the federal pen, but they're out now. Emil Richards and I don't know the other guy's name. Joe Ballion. Spencer West, Spencer Richards. And how many names are there? Four?
Three.
Besides
Tilbury.
Yeah. That's four then, huh?
Four total.
Okay, one more. A guy named Butterball Richards. I don't know his. Yeah, I've been threatened by just recently, within the past month, threatened by Wayne Tapio and Tom Conrad Jr. It was gonna.
Was it second?
Tom Conroy Jr. Conroy Jr. Said they threatened to get me, whatever that means.
Was that in relation to anything? I mean, was it just a general threat to get you, or threat to get you if you did something, or threat to get you if you didn't do something, or just general?
Well, just because of my political stance, I mean, just my belief, my traditional ways, you know, on our treaty rights, you know. And probably, possibly because we also was thinking about starting impeachment proceedings on Wilson because of his violation of our constitutional bylaws and other criminal acts. Well, it's all tied in, but
I believe I just wondered, did they say anything?
Well, that's the message I got right there. And also, there's some other council people, but actually that's, I'm not talking for them, but you know, and I just want to let you know that they've been also a threat to some of the traditional council people on the Lhasa Tribal Council. Jake Little Thunder, Jake Little Thunder, Jake Yellowhawk, Jack Steele, Frank Starr, Dave Tulance has been threatened. Matthew Eagleheart.
These are all councilmen.
Yes. They've been harassed one way or another, but you know, just that as all these shootings, there's no law or reservation that we feel that you know, something's got to be done. We got to let somebody know, you know, that we're not going to. We gotta do something to protect ourselves. Because, it was like that BIA cop just went berserk and started shooting up everybody. You know, what's, you know, our life is in danger right now because of that. Police officers on the reservation are getting too political. They're taking sides and they're not fair and they're not neutral. They're not enforcing the laws.
How large is the council?
20 members.
With the three general labor, with your position?
Roughly, we're the minority, the council, roughly 8. But we vote, what I vote for is, I will vote for justice, you know. What I see is right for our people is what I go on. I don't go on the people's personality or anything, you know. I have no hate for anybody. I consider myself a nonpartisan, neutral representative. Because no longer can our people be a goon or aim. We gotta be Oglala. Right now, the state's really pushing for a state jurisdiction. And, they're using that law and order thing for their reason. But I think if we get some neutral outside, well-trained police officers from another state, excluding South Dakota, we might be able to start working towards the enforcing the laws equal. Because right now you can go down Pine Ridge Jail here and all they have down there is probably right now is nothing but full bloods in jail. And that's discriminatory itself. Let a lot of the, my feeling is what the police officers do is they pick up the people that are easy to pick up, you know, arrest, common drunks, alcoholics. A lot of the people that drink openly on the street and cuss and cause public disturbances, one way or another, their relations to the police officers, so they usually let them ride, you know. So it's there's no law. There's no law on a reservation. But one thing I would like to say is there is law just to the poor people. They're the ones that get continually oppressed, whatever, harassed, intimidated, physically beaten. It's a daily occurrence on a reservation. Nothing's. Our educational systems, same way. The health system, same way. Our land, everything. It's a mess.
Where would you place the land?
I wouldn't necessarily place it on the council itself, but it's been like this since 1934, you know, and you know, you can't blame us, you can't blame Seward, or you can't blame, you know, just the system of the tribal government. It needs to be revised, and it must be, have a lot of input from the treaty people to conform to present day and age, you know, former government. And one thing that needs to be really is our social, economic, and it's got to be updated. It's all tied in. But I feel it's a big mass genocide conspiracy from the United States government committed on Indians, like it's been happening down in South America, Vietnam, all in places, you know, the United States is working. It's undermining people, causing divisions, pitting Indian against India. Like in our case, have beens against home blood. Landowners against white ranchers, you know. So. Oh, you mean the condition? It's right now. I see I would say the only term that I will use against the police officer here on reservation is I have to protect myself against them, the police officers. That's why I feel. That's why I look at them. I do not trust them because they're. I would have to call them their murderers, and they'd even kill their own grandma. That's what I see. They're shooting little kids now. You know. You've seen it, you read the reports or whatever, you've heard newspapers. And how can our people trust, how can they come here, you know? There's no law. There's no law for anybody.
Is there one person, I mean, you know, if you were trying to convince one person, who is there like one person or one couple of people
I think
that's what I'm wondering. I would assume that just from an organizational point of view that the overall responsibility would be on the police and probably the superintendent and into the
special agents.
Yeah, okay, and all that. I guess what I'm asking is, Do you think people at that level, are those people unsympathetic to what you're saying? Or do you think that they're actually unable to do anything about it? Do you think it's like individual policemen that are unable to be controlled by the...
We've talked to Mr. Dal Eastman, officer in charge of the in department. We've also talked to Mr. Al Trimble, superintendent of the Pine Ridge Reservation. We've discussed that question that you just asked many times, but that's been a long time, about 6 months ago, I think, 4 months ago. And to this day, you know, we've yet to see any changes. There might be a different police officer there, but they're still the same, you know. I would say they're pigs. Still got that pig attitude. They're taking sides and they're not enforcing our laws equally. Matter of fact, they're not enforcing any laws.
Does the selection...
That's all right. Lay him on because...
I'm supposing the BIA policemen are federal government employees, right?
At this point, yeah.
Okay. Is there any indication that tribal politics plays a part in who's selected as a...
Yes, I would say yes. They're very much, so now because... one of the statements that one of our fellow councilmen made during the past tribal council meeting was that, remember he's talking to you about groups of Wilson's goons were, you know, all jam-packed in the Billy Mills Hall, and people were outside and he's seen machine guns and all that. And he's seen also some of the tribal police officers right in there with them, you know. So I think that much of the hiring is done politically too. We have to say that. We can, as Law and Order Committee, as a member, as a committee, we can give recommendations. But also it's up to the superintendent and also to Dal Eastman and Bureau of Indian Affairs in Aberdeen and, you know, a long chain of command all the way up to the White House. So, you know, we've discussed problems like this many times, you know. You've seen a lot of senators come out of here, Everest, McGovern, Kennedy, whoever. You're about the 20th guy that come out here to listen to our complaints. And they sort of pass it off like it's unbelievable and all that, you know. A lot of these things happen every day, man. It's a goddamn conspiracy from some point. Our people is in danger. There's no law. We're losing our land. Politically, you know, they're taking sides, you know. I mean, there's nobody in there involved in the court system or the tribal police force. I couldn't really say that they're all nonpartisan because they all are, you know, one-sided. And also, I don't trust the FBI or any other U.S. Marshal or anybody.
I think then the only solution for total replacement
Total, all of, even our court system. Get some of our older people in there, and as you know, that knows the Indian law, the treaty law, and whatever. Get them in there and have a little input. So that code's outdated, you know. Some of them codes you read make you laugh, man. Our tribal code, it's an embarrassment. I think there's an embarrassment. To me, it is. Some of our laws here on a reservation. So goddamn loopholes, you know, a guy can get away with murder. Like it's happening every day. It's not on record.
Hey, keep that kid quiet.
Last time, I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago is when the last, maybe longer than that, 6 years ago, jury trial. There's no funds for, jury trial on reservation. You know, actually, the people don't have any rights if they can't have jury trial. And a lot of the cases are pending right now. It's mostly from the, there's approximately 100 and so many cases pending on the wounded knee, alleged wounded knee thing, you know. And they're asking for all of them asking for jury trials. And where the hell are they going to get the money for to operate these trials? I wish that the lawyers of that, them people, can really push for a jury trial right now. It's going to embarrass the tribe, it's going to embarrass the United States government, it's going to, you know, BIA, whoever's in charge. Well, right now, these people here, like chief judge and the assistant judges, the prosecutors, they're right now they're on a temporary basis. They're not really confirmed, which means that the jobs that they're holding now, they never was been advertised. And they've just sort of been appointed politically. And I don't know what it is. On that code, it says 3, I think. Well, a two-thirds vote of the council confirms the judges, prosecutor, and whoever. Which could mean two-thirds of 20 or two-thirds of 14, majority, you know, whatever they go by. Full council or the majority council, two-thirds of that. Generally covered what I told him, but one thing that I really want to stress in this thing here is that as I told him that we was elected tribal officials, you know, that we've been getting threats by Wilson's goon squad, you know, and it tends to make it very hard on some of us to go in and do business in Pine Ridge for our constituents. And we told him that we will take every means necessary to protect ourselves. And that I had a witness there with me that I told him that, you know, I told him, you know. Now, they threatened my life, and I have a witness here with me, and I'm going to tell you, you know, that I'm going to take every, protect myself and my family, or any Indian on a reservation. It's up to him. Oh, Mr. Steele, yeah. Well, he probably can tell it. I don't know where he's at. Jack Steele? He left. Yeah, he's the one that told me that, you know. And then he told Siebert and he told Dal Eastman. So he pretty well know what's all about.
I forgot what date that was, but we went to Rapid City for shopping. And on the way back, we got a case of beer at Kmart, and we left from there. And right at that Rocky Ford Junction, they stopped us, and we each had two cans apiece. And there's Francis Red Elk and Curtis Ghost and I. And when they stopped us, Lauren Robinson came over to the car and he opened the doors, the back door on which side I was sitting, on our right-hand side. And he came over like that and then he started looking through our grocery bags.
What is their capacity for? Are they police?
Oh, yeah. They had a roadblock there.
The BIA?
Yeah, the BIA.
What's in the grocery bag?
Uh-huh. And then we had some beer there, so they took those, about 3 6-packs. And then when they went through our grocery bags, I think we lost some of those groceries and he never did return. Then they put me in a different police car, separated from Curtis. And they put him in the other car. And then I called Lauren over to the police car and told him to just let me go because I was drunk. And I said I had a little girl to take care of then. So he said okay and he put me in a different police car. And then after they stopped another car and they caught some more prisoners, then from there, those other two cops left. Shh, go on.
They got the other people.
They
have beer too?
Yeah. But I didn't know who those other people were. And then from there now, we started coming back towards Porcupine. Then when he did, he near White River, there's a turnoff, there's approach, so that's where he turned in and turned his lights off and he got in a back seat. I was sitting on a left-hand side. I was sitting on a left-hand side, so he got in and he hugged me like that and he tried to kiss me, but I pushed him away. He tried to kiss me back then, and I told him that if he didn't, I told him to take me back. And he said, if you don't tell on me, he said, I'll take you back up to your house, to your mother's house.
Mom, my swagging on that.
And then when he did, I told him to, I said, well, start your car and take me back down here. He tried to kiss me again, but I slapped him on the face and I said I was going to tell the head police, whoever it was. And then from then he got in back in the front seat and then we left from there. And then he took me back up to the, he didn't take me back up to the house right away. He stopped at his residence first and he went back inside his trailer house for about 5 minutes. Then he came out and then he took me back up to the house. Then he said, before I got off, then he said, if you don't tell on me, he said, I won't catch you anymore. Then next day, I told my sister Myrna, so then she told those AIM lawyers, so then they told me to go in and file a complaint against him, so then I did.
File complaint the next day?
Uh-huh.
Then when you said you filed a complaint, you went to the Tribal Court, filed a complaint, and you complained to his supervisor, Keeson.
Then that day before I went to the courthouse, I called up his wife and I told him, then she took up for him. And then after that, I went back down to the station and then I talked to that one prosecutor and he told me to see that. It's that one guy's name, I forgot his name. No, the other one. That Jacobs? Yeah, Ski Jacobs. So then when I told him, then he told me to go back to that prosecutor and then signed some complaints, but he didn't see of what kind. So then I just gave my statement there and I signed. those complaints. Then afterwards, Andy Condon took my statement again. Andy Condon. Supposed to be a criminal investigator.
Condon?
Uh-huh. C-O-N-D-O-N. Tell me not go.
He's a criminal investigator
for the police, BIA. Uh-huh. He took my statement, then he said he'll turn it in. Then he said he'll let me know as soon as we're going to go court and everything. Then we never did go court. Afterwards, they told me he was off the force.
The police officer was off.
Uh-huh. But I think he's working as a policeman at Hot Springs. He moved over there.
Do you happen to know? I know, did he just quit or was he removed because of the sex?
Yeah, I guess that same night he did that to two same girls too, so they gave in their statements too, so I guess they're going to take him to federal court, but he didn't want to go in.
So he was removed?
Uh-huh. He's really cool.
Let me ask you a question real fast. You said you couldn't remember the date, but the month, just generally?
Mm-hmm. No, that was this past summer.
Past summer.
Mm-hmm. I think it was in July.
What were the names of the... First of all, what were the names of the...
I don't know who those other patrolmen or those policemen are, but I know there's Lauren Robinson. And there's about four of them with her.
What was the name of this person?
Which one?
The one that took you.
Lauren Robinson.
That was Robinson.
Uh-huh. No, that's
okay. My name is Curtis Ghost. Curtis Ghost. What's your name? My stimulus is going to make us about 10 minutes come back from Rapid City. This is in July. When I come back, I stop by Cynic and get a kiss of him. I have a six pack. It's three of us. And we ran into a roadblock by Rocky Ford Junction. And that's when they told us to get off the car. They're going to search our car. They went through these paper sacks we had there, and they went through them. This Mary's said she was drunk and doing catching. So I told them to leave unless she wasn't drunk. And they grabbed me by the vent, they had my hand backwards. And they put me in a police car. We just stood there in Redbach for about at least an hour. I don't know what's going on then. I said there's a lot of... I forgot the name of the police that took me to Pine Ridge. I forgot his name. I can't remember. Next day I had to pay $15 to get out. I just paid it on my own, got out. And later on, this criminal investigator, that Andy Kanda, made me write a statement, the same thing I told you. Tell him everything that happened to me. So I want to make a statement, another statement. This is in Rushville, and that's what happened about last month.
Last month?
Yeah. just
like college.
I was drinking inside of a bar up there. It wasn't that drunk. Just came out to come home because we had a long ways to come back. We came back and we had a blowout and went in the ditch and came back out like that. Got the jack and the tire off, changed the tire, and the patrolman came along. That's if it needed, was wrong, so we had a flat tire. Trying to fix it like that. Just because I mentioned the word goon. By the way, he caught me. Told me to put my head against the car and search me. Put me handcuff me. Put me in the police car. And he took me back. The next day, I went to court and the judge gave me 5 days. He sentenced me to 5 days in jail.
But, what were you charged with?
Just intoxication, that's all. And the next day, that was the time I went to court and gave me 5 days. And the next day, that's on a Thursday, I think. My folks went after me, told them I was still going to school, so they let me off. I had to pay the fine of $8. That's about all.
Leola Quiver. I'm from here, Porcupine. And I've been working with health services for 9 years. And all of a sudden, as of October 11th, I don't have a job. Yes, Indian Health Services through the tribe. And 9 years. And it seems like, I've worked with the Community Health Representatives, which is a tribal program, for 5 years, and then I was promoted to a director job with maternal health program at the hospital, and it's under the tribe. And the people who are contracting the program was a tribal health board. And ever since the beginning of the program, it seems like I've always was up against the wall as far as the health board members were concerned, because of favoritism, nepotism, and I didn't put in for the director program. They promoted me because of my qualifications. I put in for an aide job. And then there's some other people that put in for the director job, which were relatives of the health board members. But there were some younger members on the health board then who felt that, qualifications should be considered, not relatives or, favoritism. And ever since then, I've always gotten some type of seems like every meeting was sort of like a confrontation instead of a meeting. October 8th, there was a special health board meeting called with only 3 health board members present who were supposed to be called a advisory committee, supposedly. And prior to that, they had a health board meeting on October 4th. At that time, our program was sort of seemed like it was sort of shaky because of financial problems. Well, at that time, there was other programs that were shut down because of financial matters. The tribe didn't have any money, and they gave us a hassle because of, you know, money problems. Then they decided then, in order to clear up all the problems as far as finances and the program itself, they should suspend the program for 1 month, 30 days. And that was brought up at the health board meeting, and that's when they elected three people to be a committee. And they called me into a meeting October the 8th. And then they said we had till October 11th to work. That was for that was 3 days. And at that time, they said they were going to terminate all the positions. And I asked why, and they said, well, you know, this is because the program is suspended, and that will help, you know, clear up all the matters relating to the program that they think is a problem. And they sort of gave me a bad time as far as accusing me of mismanagement of the program. They said that it was going down, no services were being provided. And I felt that that was kind of an unfair judgment because there are other programs on the reservation that aren't really doing anything for the Indian people, but because of nepotism or anybody related to Dick Wilson are working on these jobs, nothing is being said about these other programs. But I was picked on before. I was almost fired after the Wounded Knee occupation because they said I was marching downtown in a protest against the U.S. Marshals. And I brought up the fact that we were sitting in our office for 3 weeks, not providing any services for the people, so we were ready to climb the walls. That's the reason why I went down. Felt that was a worthwhile thing to do, so I went down, took the day off, and marched, you know. And I got a lot of, I was a brunt of criticism for a while. I was reinstated to my job, and ever since then, it just seems like there is these feelings among some of the members of the health board that because, you know, my affiliation with AIM, I'm over-identifying myself with some political faction. And instead of really thinking about the job, they're thinking of, they're having personal feelings against me, instead of thinking about the program itself, the way the contract was written up. And I was compared to another director, and they said that I wasn't doing my job, and my secretary is doing my work, and they don't see why she should be the coordinator of the program. And they advertised all the positions. And the positions were filled as of this last health board meeting, except for the director position, which is my job. And I asked the service unit, I mean the administrative officer at the hospital, the reason why. He said it's because my application was the only one. That's why they didn't pick anybody.
You had the job, and then they suspended the program.
And they terminated my position. And I replied, reapplied, and I was the only one that applied for the job. And because I was the only one, well, then they postponed my job until December again. And I feel right there that, you know, if I was the only one that applied and I already had that job before, why didn't they give it back to me?
When they start the program, how many people were in the program?
There's a staff of six.
Okay, after that, when they suspended the program?
The terminated positions, all new,
everybody
all the...
Everybody had to reapply?
Yeah, but the ones that reapplied didn't get back in. That was... Except for the secretary, because she is a niece of one of the health board members. They put her in my job as acting director. And the other three that are in there, or other four that are in there, are all relatives of health board members. And I feel, you know, that they're not even qualified for the job. The people who were in there before have the training, they have the qualifications, but because we're not related to anybody on the health board very close, well, they're not considering us at all. And I think that's nepotism right there and prejudice.
Are you going to call?
And there'll be another meeting December 5th to pick the director job, but I don't know what's going to happen.
Who was it? Who indicated to you that the reason the director job wasn't filled was because of this application?
The administrative officer of the Public Health Service, Pine Ridge. He sits in on the health board meetings, and they make their own policies. They don't follow the tribal policies like the other programs. Because they're contracting that program, they made up their own policies. And I don't think they hold any water at all.
How long did you hold this position?
Oh, let's see, since 1971 until October 11th. And see, according to personnel policies, an employee should be notified 2 weeks ahead of time of termination or suspension or, you know, anything. But we were just told 3 days, and that's all. And that the people that they hired, the one girl wasn't even hired. From a wounded knee, and I think, you know, that's not fair for them to hire people in there because those are their relatives. And I read all the other applications before, and I found some people in there that were more qualified to do the job than the health board's relatives that are on there now.
Were there any complaints about the way you were doing the job between 1971?
Well, during that time it was all right, you know. They never said anything to me until October. That's when they start saying that services aren't being provided, that I'm not doing my job. Because I spend too much time out in the district, you know, rather than sit in my office. But according to my job description, I'm supposed to get out with the people as much as I can too. So I'll know what's happening, what's going on, what, you know, people's attitudes are. But they said I should be like that one director sitting in the office all the time, so I'll know what's going on.